Welcome back to Digesting 1899, where we're tackling the Netflix series 1899, one episode at a time. For this podcast, we watched season one, episode three, titled The Fog, and we're here to talk all about it. I'm Zach Brooks, and I'm joined by the May to my Ling Yi, Aaron Brooks.
Uh-oh, not good. but yeah, it is good to be here.
We let you out of your box. To talk about this episode.
Feeling a little foggy, other puns like that. But yeah, interesting episode for sure.
Yeah. So we're going to talk all about it. We are going through each episode of 1899 once every couple days, usually. So we're probably going to do another one tomorrow. Today's Thanksgiving, Thursday. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Tomorrow we'll probably do one on Black Friday, and then probably another one on Sunday, most likely. But make sure that you don't miss an episode by subscribing to the Digesting 1899 feed. Of course, there are old episodes of our podcast about Dark in Fargo Season 4. And send us your feedback, digestingdarkpod@gmail.com, and we'll make sure to read that. Just put the episode number in the subject line. And we actually do have a couple emails that came in since our last episode that we can talk about.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great. All right. So we're going to talk about The Fog. What did you think about the titular fog in this episode?
It's very on the nose. It was very foggy. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the kind of theories we've been batting around still seem very alive.
Yep.
And it's just, I'm feeling, I guess, a little foggy. This is definitely like one of those episodes where if I was watching this show and not forcing myself to not binge the show that's available to binge, I might watch two episodes because
this does feel like it kind of a part one to whatever the next episode is. We're setting up, at the end of the episode we got the mutiny.
Yep.
on Captain Ike, and we get a lot more of some characters we haven't gotten so far. We get Ling Yi, we get her backstory, and she is our opening opening flashback, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the opening wake up, which I believe I predicted her when we were saying who we thought was going to wake up in the next.
I wish I could remember, but
that was either that or Jerome.
Yeah,
might be a dream.
Yes, and we get a little bit more backstory on Father Romero as well, and we get this Franz character who's one of the German crew of the ship that really steps up, and he's the leader of the mutiny, from what we're seeing.
Yeah, the big doubter of Captain Ike.
Yes. And then by the end of the episode, so the last episode we ended with some technology, we ended with all those TVs. This time we end with Daniel, with some sort of, it reminds me of like a slide puzzle. A handheld remote thing that activates the circuitry below the decks. And, then the ship disappears in the last shot of the episode.
Yeah, and it was the Cerberus or the Kerberos, however you want to pronounce it. That was the ship that disappeared, not the Prometheus.
I didn't even really think about the Prometheus. Was the Prometheus still there?
They were both there. Yeah, it was just that the only ship that disappeared was the one with the lights on.
Do you have any theories on where they disappeared to?
I think wherever they disappeared to, the fog went with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because how else are you going to like just be somewhere else and not have the fog there and everything? It's like you can't let everybody in on the gig. People have to continue to be confused. So I just think, they even mentioned like it seems like the fog was put there on purpose or something like that.
Yeah, Daniel says that to Mara.
Daniel is purposely putting them somewhere else with this machine.
Yeah.
Which they also say earlier in the episode, I think it was Captain Ike, is like it's for steam. Did you write down what it said exactly?
Like, I did, but I have a lot of notes. To measure steam pressure,
said. Just some like normal ship thing, basically, and it never worked on the Cerberus, which is so that definitely is more than meets the eye. We see. I wish I knew the ship, not Franz, the nice one, who kind of is on Captain Ike's side, but not really.
I don't think we know his name. I think they just refer to him
machine as, guy.
Yeah, so he's the first mate.
What do you think of this machine with the arrows? Is that a Lost thing? That feels like it's not a Lost, even though I've never seen Lost.
I mean, there is one part of Lost that it does sort of remind me of from season two. There's a lot of stuff that reminded me of Lost in this episode. If you're a Lost fan, I think a couple of these backstories will ring pretty similar to some Lost backstories. But yeah, no, the machine, that was interesting. It looks like an elevator panel where it's like an up arrow, a red light, and then a down arrow. But it's actually some sort of way to communicate. And he enters in the code that they got through the Morse code.
Yeah, so he's probably just some patsy who's just following a code and has no idea what it's really doing.
Yeah. I guess I didn't realize that was him who entered that in.
Yes. It was like the comb-over guy who kind of looks like Conor McGregor.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. He's got like a red beard. He reminds me of a friend of mine's husband, actually. Okay. That's what he reminds me of. Very similar to Conor McGregor.
Yeah. So. Yeah, whichever reference works for you, whether it's Zach's friend or Conor McGregor.
I think more people, I would assume, know Conor McGregor, but I guess if you live in the Seattle area, maybe you know my friend's husband.
Yep, there you go.
I have so many notes. I'm like trying to find like where to even talk about, and I'm like, I have a lot of stuff written. I just like kind of transcribed this episode as it was going.
Do we want to start with the dream and just work through the three dreams of is it Ling Ji?
Yes. So whatever we want to call them, dreams, flashes,
they talk a lot about dreams in this episode. Dreams they do a lot, and that you shouldn't dream. Like dreams.
I like that they say you shouldn't dream. Like you have any control over if you can or can't dream.
I mean, you know, yeah, it's just maybe it's like more in the sense of like dreaming for more than what you have or should, or I don't know, maybe in a metaphorical sense.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, I guess that is true. These are a lot of people who are following the American dream on this ship.
Living a lie. Everybody's on here who's living some sort of a lie, which we'll get to.
And heading to America to kind of start anew. I mean, this is really like, the idea of the American dream, that's what they're pursuing. And then when the ship turns around, all the people in the lower deck especially start mutinying because they don't want to go back to Europe. They paid to go to America and they have this dream and desire to be there. And, you know, one guy even says, we can't turn around. I can't afford a second.
I mean, they even called the lowest deck the third class.
So we start with that Ling Yi dream where she's in a box underwater screaming. We do come back to that later and we kind of get that all filled in. That's pretty straightforward what happens, her backstory. That I believe it's her sister is Mei Mei, or maybe just her friend.
I think it's just a friend.
Yeah, so Mei Mei is the one who was supposed to be on the ship, and it seems like is whored out by her mom, by Ling Yi's mom. And there's some sort of like poison sedative that the mom puts in the drinks for the men who come and visit. And Ling Yi put this in Mei Mei's drink to try to get her to sleep so that she could take her identity.
Yeah. And it's kind of not made clear at first if she actually hurt her, meant to hurt her and kill her, or if she just wanted to put her to sleep to take her spot. Either way,
It does end up killing her.
Yeah, it does end up killing her. We get that made pretty clear on the second go round. At one point, it like shows her like witnessing this from like different vantage points. Like once she's looking through the box, and then she actually like sees it through her own perspective when going through the fog the second time. And it's just, you know, like everybody they've focused on so far has had a hugely traumatic backstory that, like, they're working through issues, and and it does feel like, doesn't feel like each person has whole issues. It feels like each person is representing an issue that as a whole is going to come together to represent, like, I'm not saying like one individual, but each of these people seem to be representing a different aspect of something, like whether it's family loss, trauma, or it's trauma over, you know, and then trying to make a it's just like, and then Romero.
Think it is all family loss so far that we've seen, like the backstories we've seen, because Mara, we saw the stuff with her brother, that she's missing her brother.
But
Ike has his family that burn up in the fire. And then I guess if Mei Mei isn't her family member.
Yeah. And I don't in either way, like, you know, of those three. But going to Romero, Father Romero, for example, like he's trying to make amends for the murder he did. Like, he right. says it over and over, and then he tries to warn Captain Ike. Like, he's trying to do the right thing over and over, which, good luck trying to do the right thing on this place where people like Mrs. Wilson, who say, you know, every calamity is an opportunity, are here. Mrs. Wilson's like the little finger of the ship, I have a feeling.
Yeah, I know. She has very little finger. And when she runs the – she's the one who's whoring out Ying Li.
Exactly. And then just get to that. Obviously, that scene, you know where it's heading, especially because, I mean, it's like, don't bring a gun to a knife fight. Don't bring a virgin to, you know, a whore fest, except that it's an opportunity for Miss Wilson, because what's more valuable than a good whore? A virgin whore, probably.
And an obedient one, too. One that you have some leverage over. Well, I guess she probably had leverage over her anyways, but even more leverage.
Even more leverage. And then, you know, just to kind of complete that whole thing, getting to with Lucine, and how that's just like the match made in heaven of the, you know, guy who doesn't want to use a whore for the traditional purposes. He just wants to seize out or whatever he's doing, and, you know, whether having convulsions. So
do you think that's why he got her, is just so that he had somebody to, like, so he can do this?
He needs just privacy.
But he needs somebody to, like, help him through it, but he doesn't want it to be his wife, essentially?
Yeah, I think he just exactly. And, you know, he'd rather have his wife thinking he's going off cheating on her than knowing the truth, because we get to that. And it just, again, goes to everybody's living a lie. And Lucine's backstory is super definitely very interesting, and, you know, where we're going to get with that and Jerome and everything like that. It's just, yeah.
Well, I'm going to try to remember your answer to this. Who do you think we're getting the flashback to open episode 4?
Oof. I mean, it's we've gotten one of my favorites in Ying Li. Ying Li.
Yeah.
And then it's got to be Jerome for me. I mean, I need to know more about either Jerome or Olek, or maybe Crestor, but I don't think Crestor is going to be part of this for that part. So, yeah, Jerome.
I think we're either going to get the Angel and Father Romero, even though we got that backstory later, so they won't tell that, but I think we need to see what they're actually referring to. So that would be my first guess, and...
So is that a set of four eyes then? It's like zooming out and it's like both their eyes then? Because you said Angel and Romero.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe it's just we heard Romero's side of the story. Maybe we see Angel's side of the story to open the next episode. I think that one feels pretty likely to me. And yeah, I think that's the one I would probably. I think Olek is an interesting one. I think we're definitely going to get Olek at some point this season. I just don't think we're getting him yet. Because we don't know why. We don't know much about Olek except that he works on the ship.
Yeah, exactly. And so far we've had, you know, it's gone woman, man, woman.
So it could be. Maybe. Yeah. Or the other one it could be is Lucine, I think, as well. We'd learned a little bit more about him, that he has something that, I guess those were vials that he was trying to take his medicine, and because he couldn't get his medicine in time, then he seized out. Is that what you think?
Yeah, either that or he's a drug addict.
Yeah, I thought they were little light bulbs at first.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they're little light bulbs. I don't think he's like a secret superhero. But like, I think either that's medicine to help him, but he's just like, sounds like it's just like too late for him type of thing. But I don't really believe that. Anytime a character's like, you're not going to see me for long, means we're going to see them for long.
Oh, I've never really picked up on. I guess that makes sense. I'll have to pay attention to what you're not going to see it for a
while. Like, it's just like,
if that's misdirection.
Maybe not always. There's certain instances where it's just like they're on their deathbed, like saying, like, you're not, like, okay, I get it. But he doesn't seem like he's about to die. He does seem like he has problems, but I don't know. It's 1899. Technology's changed.
Yeah, maybe he's going to see, what was the name of that show with Clive Owen where he's the doctor in, like, this time?
The Nick, I hope. The Nick. Hopefully he's not going there. Such a gross show.
I think I watched like half an episode and I wanted to go back to it. I never really got into it. And he has some sort of like, you know, his hand. I guess I thought he had like a pain in his hand, but I guess it's that he can start to feel it in his hand when the seizures are coming, so he knew it was coming.
Yeah, he's got something really wrong with him for sure.
Yeah. All right, well, why don't we talk about kind of the other main plot in this episode, which was Ike and Mara making another trip over to the Prometheus to try to investigate. Now, Ike said that he found his daughter's ribbon over there, and I think that's partially what's motivating him going there. He talks about seeing, but also he wants to find the manifest is what he says is the reason why he wants to go.
Yeah, he said he saw Nina over there as well.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure. Is Nina his daughter or Nina his wife?
I believe it's his wife based on like kind of the vision they kind of showed there. It looked like I think they like show what he kind of saw in the shadows a little bit.
Yeah.
It also reminded me similar of Mara seeing her like father in the shadows in the first episode,
mm-hmm.
like hardly being able to see him. But like overall, Mara definitely thinks that he's so crazy, even though he's shown this ribbon. Like she doesn't believe that he, you know, but like he did find it on there.
Well, and he does, and he also shows her the trapdoor, and he explains a little bit more about the symbol that we've seen, which I think is what you called this one, yeah. that symbol is the
company,
ship company's symbol.
Yep.
That ship company, it's a British company. Mm-hmm. It's owned by a man named Henry Singleton.
Yes.
So I'll be interested that we get his full name, like we're supposed to know who that is. So I'll be interested if we actually meet Henry Singleton at some point.
Yeah, well, I did Google this name, too.
Oh, good. Okay.
And
hey, you got to be careful with that because you might see recaps of the finale.
There's tons of finale. Like, I just kind of avoided reading as soon as I kind of could see it was something like that. So I didn't get spoiled. But there was a slave that an escaped slave that ended up as part of the Union around 1899. He ended up writing a book in like 1922. His name was Henry Singleton.
Ah, okay.
And he fought for the Union. So I don't know what that's going to, but it's definitely a notable name from history.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that there's no reason to give the name and to give the full name. So it.
I wrote down literally just the name. I was like, this name has to be.
Yeah.
It's such an obvious point. Yeah.
So the other thing that I think, and this is kind of leads me to one of my long-term theories on the show, which I'll get to, but he said that Henry Singleton bought three ships, and it's been three, and he had them for 3 months. He took them kind of offline or kind of out of water for 3 months to do some improvements on them. So, and then the ship company's logo is the three-sided triangle with the line through it. So, you know, we've been tracking that number three and also the number four, but the number three. You know, kind of shows up a couple times as well. A couple other times throughout the episode, I noticed the number three. So, you know, three threes right here in this one exchange.
Yep, I noticed that as well.
Yeah. And that the theory this kind of leads me to is so okay, there's three ships. So we've seen the Prometheus, and we've seen the Kerberos. So there's got to be a third ship that we're gonna see.
Yep. I never even thought about that, but yeah.
And the fact that this ship disappears, I think the season or the show could end with the third ship pulling up to this ship, just like we had, in the first episode.
Ah.
Whether they're traveling through time or traveling through space or something.
Do you think the end of this season or the end of the show overall?
I mean, I think they could be one and the same. I don't know. I haven't heard if this is a multi-season show or not.
That's
so
true. Yeah. Okay.
Or maybe we get the three ships all meeting and they're in like a, you know, not exactly the shape of a triangle, but kind of in the shape of a triangle by the end of the show.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot.
Yeah. So the other spot where I noticed three was right next to the machine when he's talking about the steam pressure machine when they're in the Prometheus. There is a cremator next to them. And he notes that gets up to 900 degrees Celsius.
Yep.
So I did a quick conversion because I don't know Celsius and I don't. Do you know Celsius at all?
No.
And I know zero is freezing in Celsius, which makes a lot of sense. I wish Fahrenheit had zero as freezing.
Yeah, that makes. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. 900 degrees Celsius is 1652 degrees Fahrenheit. That's an insanely hot cremator. I mean, I guess it has to be hot, but that 60. I can't even fathom what 1600 degrees feels like or would be like.
Yeah. 1652, and that's not the amount that was on the ship, right?
Oh, I need to look.
That would be a weird coincidence anyways.
No, I just think they pick 900 because it's okay. divisible by 3.
Yeah, no, I agree. That is very, very hot.
Yeah. 45,000 tons of steel was what the ship weighs. I'm just looking at my notes from the last episode. 3,000 tons of coal. We don't get any numbers like that. The closest we get, 1612 passengers. You know, we have the room numbers, our four-digit numbers. But I think it's the 900 Celsius, which is the more important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you notice, by the way, and I meant to lead off with this, did it feel like there was a lot more English in this episode than the other episodes?
I mean, most of the time when Maura and Ike are talking, it's in English, so... I mean, it seems like most of the time when characters from different places come together to be able to commonly understand each other, it is English, which kind of brings me to another point in the episode, which is a few different times here with Oleg and Yingli, and also with Lucene and making their confessions to each of them. They're making confessions to people who can't understand them.
Yes. I noticed that too, and we do at least once we see Crestor and Anho at the gate, and one of them says, "I can't understand you," to the other. And I think "I can't understand you" is something that gets said a couple times, I think you picked up on that in other episodes as well. So yeah, we are having people, and I wondered about that because you have all these people, you know, we have six different languages that are spoken on the show, and so it's not realistic that most of the characters can speak even two of the languages.
Right, and in a show where so many people have so many demons and confessions they're trying to get off their chest and whatnot, to be able to tell it to somebody who doesn't fully understand or can fully communicate to someone else is like what all these people almost need to just keep getting by in a way.
Yeah, it's like you're able to confess it, but you don't actually have any consequences from confessing
it. Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, and as we have a father on here, we have Father Amiro, even though it's a fake father.
He killed the guy, and I do notice he speaks Portuguese.
They did have that in the
They point that out quite a few times. So he also speaks Spanish, but Portuguese comes up, and there's a few other characters who also speak Portuguese. I didn't.
I'll have to look at that for the next one.
Yeah, Portuguese, I think, might be another language that starts to be used quite a bit for certain characters to communicate between each other, because I think German, since that's the kind of language of the authorities, is not going to probably be the language of choice as secrets start to get told.
And Ike does speak, right? Ike understands him in Portuguese, or did Ike say it?
Yes, I believe Ike was one.
No, actually, Ike doesn't, because I have written down right by the end. He says, "I don't understand what you're saying."
I believe it was his shipmate then, the Conor McGregor guy. Your friend, the wife's friend, who maybe speaks. And again, Romero is one of the people who feels like he can do something to redeem himself from his actions, while Angel's kind of the opposite. He's like, we're all just terrible.
We're all going to hell anyways. We're all going to hell. Is that like nihilism or?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, it's just like doesn't believe there's any point in redemption because no one's going to truly be redeemed, while Romero's very much on the opposite side of that. You know it's going to come, that there's going to be it's going to cost the two lovers at some point.
Right. We're probably going to have some sort of confrontation because of Angel and Crestor. It seems that there's some attraction. I mean, obviously there's some attraction between them because they have that intimate moment where they grope each other at the gate.
Yes, drawing.
And then there's the drawing of Crestor, which Romero found. So now, I mean, here's a group of three. If we're looking for triangles, again, here's a potential love triangle.
Yep.
And Angel says, you know, but you can't change the nature of things. I am who I am. You are who you are. Whereas Romero said, you know, you promised that you would change after this incident. I killed this man for you. So. The other thing with Maura, we didn't talk about this, but they do find the ship log. So they find that cremator, right? And, you know, really just like awful. If those are bodies in there, Maura says to look for teeth. But somehow the pages of the ship log were not burnt up. I don't know if that was thrown in there after the heater was, or the oven was turned off, or if this is some sort of special paper that survived the heat.
Yeah, or if it's just, you know, part of the stimulation mental.
True. Maybe it was never turned on at all. So yeah. So he does find like the perfectly saved
yes.
ship like perfectly preserved ship page. Like the one page is the one that on the back of it, it says Mara Franklin was on the ship manifest for the Prometheus.
Yep.
Do you think that means she was actually a passenger, or do you think it means she was supposed to be a passenger but was not on the ship?
I mean, she's telling herself so many times in what is the first episode over and over, she was saying her name to herself, I'm Mara Franklin, I am Mara Franklin. Like, she's trying to make herself, she's pretending to be Mara Franklin.
Oh, you don't think she's Mara Franklin at all?
No.
Oh, all right. I thought she was.
I'm pretty sure they explicitly kind of show that, and I think it's the first or second episode where she just keeps telling herself she's Mara Franklin, reminding herself before she kind of wakes up and then.
Yeah, I just assume that was something to do with her mental state.
I think
like, she has like multiple personalities.
No one else on the ship is who they say they are. Why would she be?
Okay. Yeah.
So I think.
But she is looking for. She seems like she's looking for her brother, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that, you know, or it's, you know, showing how unreliable of a narrator she is and that she's crazy.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think it's more that. I also noticed, so when they show the ship log, I didn't notice Mara Franklin on there at first. I just kept looking at Morris French, and I was like, who the hell is Morris French? And why are they showing his name? maybe we meet Morris French at some point.
He'll wake up in that episode four.
Do you think Morris French is French?
No, Dutch.
Dutch, all right. That reminds me of, like, in Forrest Gump, where he's like, this is Tex, he's from Boston, and this is, I don't remember all the names, but when Forrest's in Vietnam. So, gotta have a Tom Hanks reference on T. Hanksgiving, I guess.
Of course.
Yeah. All right, is there anything else that we have Mara meeting up with Daniel, and Daniel's talking about the fog. We kind of touched on that already, but I think that, and I guess the other time we see Daniel is when he's with the boy, and the boy has the pyramid thing.
Yeah, the pyramid shows up again. He takes it underneath the bed, like when the dials are being messed with as well.
When Daniel comes, that little bug thing comes out too.
Yep, and the boy just like collects them.
Yeah. We see Daniel and the boy face to face. Do you think, you know, if we're trying to figure out if these are the same person, do you think that helps, or do you not have any feelings?
I mean, it seems like, yeah, I still think they're the same person, and they're making me think so much it is that I don't want to believe it is.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think your expectations, you know, if you're a Dark fan, maybe would be that there's some sort of connection between these two like that.
Yeah, it seems like there's a reason why this kid can't talk.
Yeah, we still have no name for him, right?
He's just the boy.
So we have the boy that we know of, the boy, the first mate, and the Ling Yi's mother, which we don't have a name for any of them yet.
And then we always talk about the boy and connecting the boy with Ada. We should, I think, go to Ada and how the family finds out.
Oh, true. Yeah, we haven't talked about that at all.
Captain Ike is like, keep this a secret. Do not let the family know.
More secrets on the show.
Yeah, more secrets. And immediately Franz and the shipmates kind of talk about how they doubt it a little bit. Franz eventually goes down to the third class and tells them, or tells Tove, because Tove is the one who can understand Franz.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't remember what language they're speaking, but they go up. Tove sees Ada. She is dead, which they talked about earlier in the episode when Mara and the doctor are looking at her. Mara, you know, says she was fine 2 days ago. This makes no sense. And then the stupid spoiled doctor who we've been talked about starts citing Darwin, being like, gets rid of the bad apples, and then says, this is why women shouldn't be doctors. She's emotional. Mm-hmm. So like some real heavy sexism and like weirdness there. And he just wants to go and eat his breakfast. He doesn't really care about this little girl who's dead. Franz kind of claims he does, but I think more Franz wants Captain Ike overthrowing this mutiny that happened, so he's going
to hide the power.
He's going to hide behind the cause, and he lets Tove take Ada down with the family. Family shows again when we get down there. The family is super reliant on prayer, which I think, you know, is a, you know, definitely a commentary of the lower class having to rely more on kind of that sort of. You know,
the opium structure. For the masses is what I don't remember who said that, but religion is the opium for the masses is that
exactly, Exactly, yeah. And then they show, I believe, is the father, the grandfather, always holding that doll, like gripping that doll that definitely signifies something. Reminds me of voodoo, but I don't know what it's going to be. But basically, Tove is like, just prayer is not enough for me. We need to do action. We need to mutiny. And then, Franz arms them and uses them for his, what he thinks is going to be his benefit. These bodies are piling up more and more.
Yeah, they find two also, more bodies. I mean, this reminds me way so more
than two bodies.
That's true. Yeah, he finds the two originally, right? And then there's more that he finds. This reminds me so much of the first couple episodes of Dark.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're in the middle of the fog right now. So, sometimes you see like a shorter episode on a podcast and you're like, uh-oh, that wasn't a good episode. No, we almost have to wait because we have so many questions that we're still forming with the next episode or the next few episodes, I think. So.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking to that kind of that religion too, so when Crestor does find out about Ada, he runs to the window and he tries to break open the window because he says the window must be open so her soul can leave.
Did that not remind you of, is it Magnus?
Magnus was the son.
Yeah, the blonde who punched the wall after he found out about, reminded me so much of that. Maybe again, it's just in, sorry about the dog in the background there, but maybe again, that's just like a directing style that's coming up, but either way.
Yeah, there's definitely some parallels. I'm picking up on those parallels for sure. And, I hate to sound like a broken record and keep being like, this reminds me of Dark. This reminds me of Lost, but it definitely does. Maybe I need to watch more shows with all the time that I have.
I think some of this is intentional. So we'll see. I think we're still learning a lot about it, but.
I mean, we're not going to have any idea what's going on. Even in the last episode, we're probably not going to have any idea what's going on. So it's like we're just kind of exploring where the questions that we have still are. Who was it that gets kind of locked up at the end? It's whoever ran down to warn the crew. Was it the first mate who gets thrown in the?
He
gets thrown in like the cell or whatever. Was that Jerome in the cell with him? Okay. Yeah. I was trying to figure out who that was. It was really dark, and I was watching it during the daytime, so it was really light in the room where I was watching it. Okay. Cool. Anything else that you want to touch on? I have a couple odds and ends, but anything big stuff that we haven't gotten to that you want to make sure we talk about?
No, I think that we've pretty much covered, for the most part, I think with Angel talking about how we all wear masks and Angel's was chosen by his mother, I thought was an interesting one.
Themes of mothers in this, both Angel's mother and Ling Yi's.
Yeah, Ling Yi's, not Ying Li's. Sorry if I reversed that at any points, but it's going to happen more than once. But Ling Yi.
Yeah, there's also, I don't think we had Norwegian in other episodes. We have people speaking Norwegian in this episode as well. So even more languages that are being spoken.
Yeah, and Mora bringing up her miscarriage when asked about kids, that's been brought up several times now.
Yes, and I think, with that and the boy, whether this is like a surrogate son to her or maybe she was on this other ship and she had him and then time passed, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's some kind of familial connection and motherhood connection with that miscarriage.
And how she's afraid to go back because she lost everything, I think. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we get into the few, we have some feedback email wise. So let me pull those up again. If you do have feedback yourself, send it into digestingdarkpod@gmail.com. Also, we host this podcast on Anchor, and Anchor has this cool new feature that we actually got some feedback on. That is, if you're listening on Spotify, there should be a little thing that pops up and says, what'd you think of the episode? And you can actually just respond right in there and it gets sent to me. So Daniel, hopefully not the Daniel that's on the ship, says, off topic, I'm so happy to hear you guys again. Love the Dark podcast. Glad you're back. So,
nice. Be back, Daniel.
Yeah. So thank you for that. So that came in through the Spotify Anchor thing. Cool. But then we also got emails. Emily Allen, probably no relation to Olin Allen because he's in Ireland. She says, hello from Houston. My husband and I binged 1899 2 days ago, and we were so fascinated that even Reddit couldn't keep us occupied. So we were thrilled to see y'all were putting out a podcast about each episode. It's very fun to hear your perspective and your hot takes as you watch. You will not get any spoilers from us. We have a long Thanksgiving drive from Houston to Dallas, and we've already listened to the first two episodes, so looking forward to hearing the rest of the podcast. Happy Thanksgiving, Emily and Brandon. Right. So that's exciting to hear that they finished the season and they couldn't stop reading Reddit about it.
Yeah. No, I'm excited that with this show being out for over a week now, that I haven't seen any, even on accident, like a consensus, like this is what this is going on here. I've definitely almost gotten spoiled on a couple of thumbnails.
Okay.
Really close. So be very careful if thumbnails. I go on YouTube a lot more than you. Not for this, but just in general. And yes, I've almost gotten, you just have to really be careful on thumbnails, because there's a few thumbnails that might spoil some things. But like, honestly, I think this is what's beautiful about Dark, these creators, is that it's not fully about solving it. It's about what conclusion do you kind of come to.
Yeah, it's really fun to just kind of like, we're so in the dark about what's going on, to just kind of like
in the piece
different things together. Exactly, it's very fitting.
Yeah, it's I still hold firm that this is part of the Darkiverse, by the way.
Yeah, I don't, but you know, we'll see. All right, and then one other email that we got in from James, and this is just kind of a general email. He says, "You guys were saying that the cues for the music, like ominous synth tones, were annoying. Did you know that if you just turn the subtitles off, you will still get all the subtitles for non-English languages without the audio description of the music, etc.?"
Ooh, I'm going to do that, because that's too helpful. It's too helpful.
Yeah.
It really does spoil for a moment before moments. Like, oh. Like, so that's
there were some really funny ones. During the Crestor Anho exchange, or whatever you want to call it, love scene, I wrote down some of the really funny ones that made me laugh. There was sultry synth music.
Ooh.
Gate pounds rhythmically.
Rhythmically, yeah, I do remember that one.
And then rattling increases in tempo. So I really liked all of those. I thought those were good. I don't know if I wrote down any other ones, but those were some of my. Maybe I'll write down some of my favorite. Because I'm gonna keep those on. So maybe I'll write down some of my favorite cues that come up, the audio cues. Oh, also mutineers yell, which I guess I never thought of people being called mutineers that are mutining.
Yeah. So.
All right. I think that's everything except MVP. Anything else before we do MVP?
Nope. Nope. I think we covered it.
All right. So far our MVPs are Jerome, Ike, Angel, and Daniel each have one. Who is your MVP for episode 3?
I mean, sometimes the MVP isn't the most responsible guy. Sometimes it gets to be the most exciting, even though I don't think Russell Westbrook won it the year he got the triple double, but like this guy kind of
did, right? Didn't he? In the big thing was that James Harden didn't win it.
Oh, he did. So this is a great example, like not about the results, but man, it was fun to watch all those triple doubles, right? Well, Franz Westbrook is my MVP because like he's getting it started here. Like, I do not agree with what he's doing. I really hate when people hide behind a cause to get like what they really want and like act like, oh, I care about this little girl. Like, he doesn't care about Ada, but it's an MVP type of move early in the season here. Let's be honest. You know, Daniel's the guy with the stacked team. So I'm not going to give him credit for moving around a bunch of buns and making this big move, because it's like, you have the Warriors behind. It's like, you're really going to have to do more than that. Other bad NBA puns.
Does that make Ike like the LeBron James? He's kind of like he's the legacy guy who's been here forever. He was in Dark, that actor.
Captain. He's gonna have to do a lot more to prove it. Exactly. So Franz Westbrook is my MVP.
Well, this might be the first time in this podcast history. There might have been other times, but I'm also giving it to Franz. I had him written down. I was like, he's doing something. I'm like, yes, all right. People aren't just talking and giving us mysteries, but he's actually taking action, even if he's probably making a mistake. Yeah. I think that there is a reason that Franz wants to get to America so badly that we do not know yet. And actually, as I'm talking about this, I wonder if Franz is going to be our opening dream to start the next episode.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Franz isn't that complex. I don't think Franz I'm gonna say Franz does not get an opening all season.
Okay, all right, that's it. We'll have to wait and see. You think he's more just like a Brutus, like
the future bet
on Bruno or something?
The future bet on Franz getting a vision. It's probably about to pick him, honestly. So we're gonna go on the no. Minus 115.
All right. Well, the episode title for episode 4 is we continue our title structure where we have the something. It is the fight. So we go from the fog to the fight. So we've had the boat, the boy, the fog. So we had two episodes that both started with B, right? The boat and the boy. And now we have two episodes that start with F, the fog and the fight. Okay. So fun pattern.
Yeah.
So, and we'll probably be back a little bit, you know, hopefully tomorrow, hopefully Friday, November 25th, Black Friday, Dark Friday, if you want to call it that. And so send your feedback in. Make sure you put your episode number in the subject line, or at least like what you're through, so that I know, you know, to avoid any spoilers. And that email can go to digestingdarkpod@gmail.com. And, you know, be sure you subscribe. And, you know, as we're episode 4, we're going to be halfway through the season after the next episode.
Yep. Yeah, it's been a fun ride so far. I'm not going to compare if I like it more than Dark or less. I just think that's totally unfair. But
if I had to say, I would say I don't like it as much as Dark yet, but I don't know if I like it. I think by episode 4 was when, I'm trying to remember the episode when Dark really kind of like clicked and shifted, and it was right around episode 4 for me.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, you know, Dark, I think, had in some ways the advantage of being in the setting it was, so that grounded setting really makes it some, like, the different kind of sci-fi and time travel type of threads more unique than with this kind of far away period piece having that, maybe. So we'll see. But either
way, and it's like, yeah, I mean, well, it's literally not grounded because it's on the sea.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, this is like a little bit more fantastical so far. You know, the other one was a little bit more like almost like scientific, and this one's a little bit more feels like faith based.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see. I'm still definitely really enjoying it, and I definitely want to watch more than one episode, which is, I think, how the show should be.
Yeah, but it's more fun to watch one episode and then digest it each time. Agreed. So, all right. I don't know if we've been even doing social plugs, so where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Aaron, J-A-Y Brooks. I'm tweeting about mostly movies over there.
And you do UFC stuff on follow on there, right?
And you can find all that stuff. And if you're interested, you can check out my UFC and MMA breakdowns over at Aaron the Dog MMA on YouTube.
There you go. And don't look at any 1899 thumbnails while you're over on YouTube, though. Be careful about that. So
unless you're already through the season,
And you can find me at Brooks ZA on Twitter. I also host a movie podcast called Movie Ladder, you can find that at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram. So we do a different movie each week that connects to the movie from the previous week. So a little bit different than this podcast, but equally fun. And we'll be back very soon to talk about episode number 5 of 1899 titled The Fight.